The year 1959 is regarded as possibly the most significant year in the history of jazz music. It produced the best-selling and most celebrated jazz album in history, the Miles Davis classic Kind of Blue. It also gave us Time Out, Dave Brubeck's breakthrough album. Earlier this year, Cormac Larkin came in to speak about those two albums and their enduring legacy. And Cormac is back now with part two of his celebration of the year 1959. And this time, he's picked two further classics from that year. John Coltrane's Giant Steps, which changed jazz saxophone playing forever, and the occasionally political, incredibly important Charles Mingus classic Ah-Um. And what a great place to start from that album, Mingus Ah-Um. This is Better Get It In Your Soul. They are having fun. Charles Mingus from the opening track from his classic album, Ah-Um, a track called Better Get It In Your Soul. Cormac Larkin has been looking back at the significance of both the album and the year it was released, 1959. It's a great track, Cormac, and they really are having great fun as well as the mastery we're hearing there.
Absolutely, you know, and I think that the thing about this record is there's just so much energy and so much kind of joy in the music that we're hearing.
And how fresh was that in 59?
Well, in 59, Mingus recorded three albums. One was Blues and Roots, and the other one was Mingus Dynasty, and this one is sort of in the middle. And they're kind of, Mingus is so interesting because he strikes that perfect balance between the past and the future, because he's definitely referring it to, you can hear the hollering in the background, and there's this kind of atmosphere of church. There's the atmosphere of the kind of New Orleans music, and all of the history of the music is there, and he was a great student of the history of the music. But there's also then this fantastic freedom and this freedom of expression that I think characterizes all of the records that we're talking about in 59, that there's this flowering of expression in the jazz community at this time, and they're kind of finding their voice.
And the pulsating refrain that keeps the energy going in the track.
Yes, I mean, the other record that I was talking about, Blues and Roots, it's very bluesy what Mingus is doing, and that idea of call and response, and the way the whole band works together and creates the kind of the energy that's happening. It's all very much rooted in the blues and the kind of that energy of the blues.
So that comes from the album Ah-Um. So tell us about the album. Why is it so special?
Well, like I say, I mean, he recorded three albums in that year, and Ah-Um has kind of risen over the years to be the one that everyone talks about from this period, because it's Mingus's sort of hymn to the ancestors is what Ah-Um is all about. There's particular references to Duke Ellington, who was Mingus's great idol. And there's also, just 2 months previous to this, Lester Young, the saxophonist, had died. And so the song on this, Goodbye Pork Pie Hat, has become a major jazz standard. Everybody plays it. If anybody knows, there's a Joni Mitchell record called Mingus that is dedicated to Mingus. And Joni sang the lyrics to this, put lyrics of her own to Goodbye Pork Pie Hat. So it has become a hugely significant tune. And so what Mingus is doing is paying his dues here, paying his respects to the ancestors, and the kind of the record, the whole record glows with that sense that he had of the past.
Well, there was something definitely in the water in 1959, but it was also on the cusp of another kind of liberation, wasn't it? It was just at the beginning or at the nascence of the civil rights movement. How there is a track on the album, and it's called Fables of Phoebus, and this refers to a notorious governor at the time.
Well, you know, I mean, when we look at the music of 59, we're talking about the kind of the as I was saying earlier, that you've got a whole community. This is they're defining themselves and producing this. What is their classical music? And many of the, including Mingus, and many of these musicians didn't particularly like the word jazz, and they would have regarded this as their classical music, and it's the voice of their community. And So the connection with the civil rights movements, and we'll talk about this with Coltrane as well, it's like they're pulling themselves up to their full height, you know, and demanding to be heard and demanding that this music be treated as seriously as classical music was being treated.
Yes, because the lyrics in Fable of Phoebus are on the nose, aren't they? I mean, it's not pulling punches.
So he later recorded it again with the lyrics, and they're all about you know, the Ku Klux Klan and accusing people of being Nazi fascists, supremacists, and he was very down on, you know, the white establishment of the time. Mingus is the angry man of jazz. It's really worth checking out his autobiography called Beneath the Underdog. Is a scorching sort of diatribe against the establishment and a demand for this respect that we're talking about for the music and for the black community. So Fables of Phoebus is really like a very interesting, he wasn't allowed, the record company at the time wouldn't allow him to put the lyrics on. And it's one of the first examples of an overtly political statement. And of course, it does kind of open the 60s.
Now, the 30s and 40s were all the big band swing. And these gave rise then to bebop, the likes of Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie. Then where does Charles Mingus fit into that bebop era?
I think that jazz is the popular music of the time in the 30s and 40s. That's what everyone is going out to dance to. And they dance to dance bands. And so the great bands of the time, Duke Ellington and Count Basie and Fletcher Henderson and, you know, Benny Goodman and all those bands, that was pop music and everybody loved it and everybody wanted it. But after the war, the economics of putting a band of, you know, 24 people on the road and keeping those on the road just became impossible. And so it was kind of economics that dictated that the bands would get smaller. And whether that was driving the innovations that then came, because we talk about small group jazz then after the war in New York, Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk, Dizzy Gillespie, inventing bebop, inventing a new music, a new way of expressing themselves that takes what they had learned from Ellington and people like that, but brings it in a new direction, and it's really creating an art music out of a popular music.
So John Coltrane is the second album you want to talk about. This is called Giant Steps. We'll talk about it in a minute, but let's hear a snippet of the title track. I know you don't want to fade that, Cormac, but we just have to talk about it a little bit. That's Giant Steps and John Coltrane. The saxophonist, is that what he's known as?
Coltrane bestrides the narrow jazz world like a colossus. There's no doubt about it. The period after Coltrane is referred to as post-Coltrane. There's no getting away from. It's an innovation on many levels, but I think one of the principal things to understand about John Coltrane, I interviewed his drummer Elvin Jones years ago, and Elvin was telling me that they would be playing concerts in the Village Vanguard, and that would be 3 hours solid, and then in the break, Coltrane would go into the dressing room and rehearse and practice. He obsessively practiced, and what that brought him was this incredible virtuosity on his instrument. And my feeling is that that sort of virtuosity makes apparent emotions and feelings that can only be found when you have that kind of mastery of your instrument. And so that's what we're hearing when we hear Coltrane. And Giant Steps today is still today regarded as the kind of Everest that every saxophonist must climb. It's technically very demanding. The chords are moving past very rapidly, and a lot, you know, it's kind of, it's the test of your mettle. Can you play Giant Steps? Tommy Flanagan, who's the piano player on that record there, if we'd let it play on, we'd hear that Tommy Flanagan can't really play over Giant Steps changes, but he came back to it later in his life to prove that he had mastered it, sort of thing, you know.
Well, we said we'd play a little bit of Charles Mingus' Fables of Phoebus before we end, so let's hear a little bit of that now.